This psalm, as it continues on, is a very sad psalm. God is lamenting the lack of blessing that his people could have had. We're going to end this morning with a very sad phrase, what might have been. And you kids and young people, young adults, you pay attention this morning because you got your whole life ahead of you. You don't want to come to the end of your life and look back and think about what might have been if I'd followed hard after God. God wanted to do all kinds of good things for his people. What might have been. God has a single path for your life this morning. He has a specific will for your life this morning. He has a place that he wants you to serve this morning. He has a person that he wants you to marry. The single path has thousands of exits, though, scores of detours, lots of ways to get off the path. What if I wouldn't have listened to God when I was playing football? What if I would have transferred, like I thought about doing, from Bob Jones University to Lebanon Valley Apostate and Party School? What would have happened if I'd have taken that detour? It wouldn't have been good. I would have never met my wife. I'd never met the one that God had for me. I mean, we enjoy being together. I mean, we had a blast yesterday all day long. We just had a ball out there. I thank God I stayed on that path. You know, if I would have exited, if I'd have taken a detour, there'd have been some disasters. There would have been disasters. A missionary and his wife set sail for Africa with lots of things and lots of equipment. They had great plans that they were going to do in Africa, and on this ship they were on, it began to leak. And in those days, the only thing they could do to try and get help was to set the ship on fire, so they set the ship on fire, and fortunately, there was another freighter that was going in the area. They saw the smoke of the flames, and they came, and they rescued everybody on the ship, but the missionaries lost everything, and his wife says, "Honey, maybe God doesn't want us to go to Africa." Isn't that what the devil does every time God has a plan? He comes with some distraction, some detour, some exit, and the husband said, "No, he just wants us to travel light." You know, every man who travels with his wife on vacation would love to travel light, but no husband has ever experienced traveling light. So they went to a tribe, and this tribe had never heard about Christ, and they were ministering there for years and years and years, and nobody was getting saved. And the wife knew she was good with medical things, and so she became a midwife to that tribe and the tribes around the area, and she would go there and help them. And years went by, and one day she got really sick. Their call came from a neighboring tribe, and so she got up and she went and she helped and she came home, and that night she was totally exhausted and she went to bed and she went to heaven. She died. They buried her that same day in that hot jungle climate. And then letters began to come from America saying, "Oh, you can't stay there in Africa. You got to come home. You know, you have 5 children. Your wife has died. You can't stay there anymore. You got to come home." And these letters kept coming. And then one of the natives came up to the missionary and said, "Tell me more about Jesus." And he got saved. Then another one got saved. And another one got saved. Whole tribes getting saved. They're just coming to Jesus left and right. And he gathers them together and he said, I've been with you all these years, and all of a sudden you're all getting saved. What's the reason for that? And the lead man, the first guy saved, says, missionary, we knew that your religion was good enough for living, but we didn't know whether it was good enough for dying. And now we've seen that your religion is good enough for dying. We were at the funeral service. We saw sadness mingled with joy. We saw sorrow, but it was a hopeful sorrow. We heard talk about a reunion. There's nothing like that in our culture. What if the missionary would have went home? What if the missionary would have got off the path? What if the missionary would have taken that detour that the letters told him he needs to take? There'd be a lot of people in hell right now. You can't get off the path. You got to get on it, you got to stay on it, and you got to keep working hard for the Lord. You know, Psalm 81 starts out with a view of God's deliverance, and we see good things. And we come up to verse number 6 of Psalm 81. I removed his shoulder from the burden. His hands were delivered from the pots, from the slavery. God says to them, I rescued you from Egypt. And then we go on to verse number 7. Thou callest in trouble, and I delivered thee. I answered thee in the secret place of thunder. I proved thee at the waters of Meribah, Selah. But then God gives them a requirement, verses 8 and 9. Hear, O my people, and I will testify unto thee. O Israel, if thou wilt hearken unto me, there shall no strange god be in thee, neither shalt thou worship any strange god. No strange gods, verse 9, twice. Now people come up and they say, oh, you're some kind of religious Pharisee because you want your Sunday school teachers to dress like a Christian. We want to dress like our culture, you legalist. We don't accept God's demands to be distinct. We don't like it that you want us to live a godly lifestyle and not a worldly lifestyle. And we don't like it that you don't want the choir to go out drinking beer on Saturday night and singing the praises of God on Sunday morning. This business of holy living, this separation from wrong, this business of having a lifestyle that pleases God, that's some new invention. No, it's not. It goes back to the very beginning. God demands it. His character demands it. He said, be ye holy, for I am holy. Now, there's something this country better get back to in the church. Better get back to holy living. Better empty the junk out of the fridge and out of the music box and whatever else that's tripping us up in our life. Be holy, for I am holy. So here in Psalm 81, there's not just a review of the glory days, but there's a review of Israel's disobedience. Look at verses 11 and 12a. But my people would not hearken to my voice, and Israel would none of me. So I gave them up unto their own hearts' lusts. Interesting. Isn't that interesting? Their punishment for their disobedience was he let them do their own thing. All right. If that's what you want to do, go ahead. I see America written all over it. Have you ever seen a dog chase a tire? What would happen if that dog latched onto that tire? It'd not be a pretty picture. It'd end up with a smashed dog head. That was Israel. God says, I don't want you to have any strange idols. Everywhere they went, they started adopting. They started latching on to those tires, being destroyed. We read about the birth of Samson this morning. Here's a dear mother who was barren, and Gary in our breakfast yesterday was talking about the great mothers of the Bible and the fact that if a lady wasn't able to have children, that was really looked frowned upon. That was like, you know, ostracized, down with you in that culture. God gave her a son. And I'm sure that Samson's mommy was a good mom. And I'm sure that she raised him just right, taught him. And he did some great exploits for God, no question. He did great exploits for God. But you know what Samson did? He got off the rails. Got off the path that God had him on. He started going off the exits. He started taking detours. Was that his mommy's fault? Nope. As his fault, he's totally responsible for saying no to God and his way. I can see Samson's mommy sitting him down, talking to him, trying to get him to get on the right path again. Come on, what's the matter with you? You weren't raised like that. He was bent and determined to do his own thing. He was latching on the tires. Didn't end well. Didn't end well. There's a three-year-old little boy, and his mommy hires a nanny because she wants to do things around the house, and she has a business, and so I need someone to help out with this, and so I don't have to fuss with him so much. And so the boy is in the other room with the nanny, and he starts to whining in there, and his mom says, what's going on? Oh, no. Just let the kid have what he wants. So a few moments later, the boy's screaming at the top of his lungs, and the mother jumps from her desk and runs in the other room. What's going on? Well, the nanny said, well, he was reaching for a bright colored wasp at the window, and you said let him have what he wants. You see, what you want sometimes is going to sting you. You got to stay on the path. Stay on the path. What your flesh wants sometimes is going to harm you. That was Samson. Yeah, the flesh. So Israel, they got their way. They did what they want, and Psalm 106 says that God sent leanness into their souls. Next thing that happens to them, we find in verse 12b, they lost God's wisdom. And they walked in their own counsels. Christendom today is filled with people walking in their own counsels. Nobody ever read the Bible and then said, well, you know what? We need to do worldly music so we can reach worldly people. Well, you know what happens? If you use worldly methods, you're going to get a worldly result. You're going to start finding out you got all kinds of massive sin going on out there. Nobody ever read the Bible and said, oh, we're having church too much. It's a business of having Sunday school and Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night. That's not in the Bible. You're right. It was daily. Read the book of Acts. You know, a revival has never come from a lessening of God's people coming together. Revival results in God's people getting together more. That's what revival does. And now they're replacing preaching with drama because they're walking in their own counsels. They say soul winning doesn't work anymore. Soul winning fails every time it's not tried. Walking in their own counsels. And then in the Bible we see in this chapter in Psalms there's regret over their disobedient decisions. Verses 13, 14, 15b. Oh, that my people had hearkened unto me. And Israel had walked in my ways. I should soon have subdued their enemies and turned my hand against their adversaries. The haters of the Lord should have submitted themselves unto him, but their time should have endured forever. You know, God can do anything. God can save that wacko neighbor next door. God can save that guy. God can save your worst enemy. And that's what God wanted to do for Israel. They'd have none of that. They went by their own counsels. They could have enjoyed God's finest bounty. Look at verse 16. He should have fed them also with the finest of the wheat and with the honey out of the rock. Should I have satisfied thee? So we have some great reminders here. Number one, God has power. All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. We worry about who's going to get in the White House. You know, who is in the White House has nothing to do with what happens in the church house. And it's the activities of God's people in the church house that's going to change the laws of the land by winning them to Christ. And then they'll change the laws of the land. There's nothing impossible for God. We have to stop putting God in a little box and imagine he can't do this and he can't provide that and he can't do this over here and he can't do that. What the world? What kind of faith is that? That's what Israel had. They lost it. God can do anything. You have to believe that. You have to believe that. God can do anything. Number two. So number one, God has power. Number two, God demands purity. God demands purity. Twice he said, no strange gods. Oh, but you know, we could, a little bit of the world here and a little bit of God and a little bit of society and a little bit of spirituality and a little bit of programming and we'll tweak this and it'll all be good. No strange gods among you. Number three, God demands purpose. Verse 10, open thy mouth wide. He says to Israel. You think he's saying that to us today? Open your mouth wide and I will fill it. Go to prayer with your mouth open wide. And claim the victory of the cross and the resurrection and the promises of the Word of God. Little kids in the Sunday school class were praying for a long time. They had a special day coming up and teacher said, now boys and girls, I want you to pray for 25 kids to come on that day. And the kids got to praying and they prayed for weeks and months and that day finally came and they opened the doors of the church house and 10 kids walked in and then there was 15 and then there was 20 and then there was 30 and then there was 40 and then there was 50. And the sunniest little teacher says, "What's going on here? Look at all these kids this morning." And one little boy raised his hand. He said, "Y'all were praying for 25 and I was praying for 50. What we need to do at Faith Chapel is open our mouth wide. We need to start believing in big things. Stop looking around at the status quo. Stop looking around at what's not happening over there. And be concerned about what God's going to do here. Open your mouth wide and I will fill it. You know what? Maybe we could see these pews filled up. Maybe we could see a lot of people saved. Maybe we could even build some buildings. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it, God says. We need to pray, we need to think, we need to believe that our God is all-powerful. And our God is not like a vending machine where you go up and stick in a bunch of quarters and hope we'll get a little something out of it. You know, I think that's the way a lot of Christians pray today. Their God is a vending machine, and if they keep praying, put a few quarters in there and keep putting some more quarters in there, they'll get a little something after a while. You need to haul the vending machine out. Remember, our God is all powerful. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. A young lady raised support to go to India, and then her mother died. And dad said, "Would you please stay here and help to raise these kids?" And in the process of time, she helped raise a family, and she lost a couple of husbands and in death, and she lost four children in death, and then she got married again, and she had twins. She had a little boy and a little girl, and the little boy died. And so she took the little girl and wrapped it up and put it in a cigar box and took it to church and laid it on the Lord's Supper table and said, "God, will you bring forth missionaries and servants through this little girl?" Guess what? Today, 2016, there are over 30 descendants on the mission field. What does God say? "Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it." And we have to believe that. We have a fellow Pennsylvanian named Charles Darby. Anyone ever hear of him? Charles Darby. He left Williamsport, Pennsylvania during the California Gold Rush. And he went out there and he got his claim and he got his mine. And man, he was digging and man, he was finding gold and he was hiring people and they were finding more gold and he was becoming very wealthy. And then that day came when it looked like the mine was exhausted and the gold was gone. There's not going to be no more. So he closed down the mine, sold equipment, sold his claim to the junk dealer. Well, the junk dealer, he went there and he looked at all this and he thought about dismantling everything. He thought, "You know what? I wonder if I dig a little bit and maybe I'll find some gold in this mine." He dug 3 feet. And found the richest gold mine in that mountain. He was far richer than Charles Darby. Charles Darby had a nephew. His nephew went into the life insurance business. Now, way back in those days, if you sold $1 million of life insurance in a year, you're doing something. And he did that. And he was asked the question, "What's the secret?" He said, "I never stop digging 3 feet from gold." You know what? We might be 3 prayer meetings away from revival. we might be three door knocks away from a soul coming to Christ. We may be 3 days away from something awesome happening in this church. Now, we're going to dig or we're going to sell the tools. We're going to pray or we're going to quit. 52 of you, you're done with 3 weeks of committed prayer. 3 weeks are gone. Can you believe it? Will you continue on? Will you keep digging? I think we're up to 8 or 9 weeks. Not missed one day of prayer. And I'm not going to miss a day of prayer, because as soon as I start thinking about missing a day of prayer, the Holy Spirit is there like in half of a split second saying, no, you're not. If I got to sit from 11 p.m. to 12 p.m., it's going to get done. That may happen today. What if you're just a little ways from seeing God do something miraculous? Open your mouth wide, and I will fill it, God said. In our lives as believers today, the saddest phrase that could ever be written down on our heavenly eternal record is, what might have been if we'd have kept digging. What might have been if I didn't take the exit off the path that God had for me? What might have been if I wouldn't have listened to so-and-so discourage me from doing God's work and God's will? Something to think about. God said to Israel, and he says to us today, open your mouth wide, and I will fill it. Let us pray. Father,